House Committee on Revenue for Wednesday, February 14th, 2007 will come to order. I want to talk for just a moment about the agenda. We are scheduled today for a first public hearing on House Bill 2388 and House Bill 2196. I can tell you that we are not going to get to those today, and so if you're here for those, I apologize in advance. We will be working, we'll be doing a work session on other bills. We have a continuation of the public hearing on House Bill 2210. Unless things go very expeditiously on our other business, I expect that we will be hearing the two witnesses who wanted to speak on that, who signed up yesterday for the public hearing, at the work session time tomorrow. And again, I apologize in advance for that, but I'd rather not hold you here today with the expectation that we actually will not get to you today. And with that, I would like to open a work session on House Bill 2201, and I would like to hear it first from the Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Representative Jeff Merkley from District 47. Speaker of the House, I've come to talk to you today because nothing is more important that we will consider this session than this plan for ensuring the children of the state. It will affect more than 100,000 children, and that affordable, accessible health care will have a profound impact not only on the children but on their families. If we were to line up those children, that line would stretch 40 miles. So I'd like to ask you all to envision children lined up from here to Portland, roughly that 40-mile distance. I have recalled people coming into my office during their 2001-2002 turndown who had a specific health care problem, and they were concerned about losing health insurance under OHP standard, and they'd have a specific story about the challenges that they would face. But this is not a small number of people, nor was that for a matter, but this is a huge line of Oregon's children and Oregon's families waiting on the Oregon legislature to figure out a way to provide affordable, accessible health care. I think the sentiment that this is a very important stepping stone is widely shared on both sides of the aisle. And that led last week to more than 10 hours of negotiation involving the Republican House leadership and the Democratic House leadership. And I want to praise those who participated because they came and they brought their ideas and they brought their hearts and they brought their minds and they applied them to seeing if we could have a plan that we could put forward today that would bridge the differences between the individual perspectives and the caucus perspectives on how to take this bill forward. I would, of course, love to be sitting here today with the Democratic leader of the House and the Republican leader of the House saying that we succeeded. And we may not have succeeded in being able to put both caucuses squarely behind a plan, but what did come out of those discussions were many good ideas for improving the plan. And while we continue to work on bridging the differences in perspectives, we need to take those best ideas, put them into this plan, and take this plan forward. So I do thank the Republican leadership and Democratic leadership who participated so wholeheartedly in putting those ideas forward. What I'm presenting to you today is a group of amendments. I believe that you will have a sheet that will say proposed amendments, if it's been passed out yet. And it will list 7 amendments. Do you have those, Mr. Chair?
I do, and I'm wondering if other members do.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we do, Mr. Speaker.
I'm only going to speak to five of these amendments, and amendments number 6 and 7 are technical amendments best left in the hands of the staff and chair who were involved in the preparation, or those who were involved in the preparation. The other five involve ways to improve this plan. The first is to change the rate on the federal poverty level to 300% from 350%. This is the rate that's been widely adopted by other states in the nation. It is also the highest level at which we receive federal match. And in that sense, it maximizes the federal investment that we will bring to the state of Oregon. It also goes much further in bringing more children into the plan than we would be bringing in if we were at a rate of 200 or 250% other ideas that have been put forward. The second amendment addresses residency, and it provides evidence of Oregon residency for all applicants. This was a response to the concern of ghost applicants who might apply from other states but not truly be residents of the state, so people would have to show that they do, in fact, live here, and would also require 6 months of legal residency except when qualified under federal law. And this is a response to the desire to assist people in the state but not say to the world, move to Oregon and we will take care of every health care need. So the goal is to serve people who move to the state but not incentivize people to move to the state. The third amendment comes out of a conversation about how to make health care accessible. Even if someone has insurance, you need certain things to take advantage of that insurance. You need help knowing when you need to go to a doctor, and therefore we'd be setting up a statewide nursing hotline so that every family could call up and say, here is the problem I'm experiencing. Is this a serious problem? Should I go to emergency care? Should I go to urgent care? And second of all, the second line is an access line. And that is designed to answer a different question, which is, who can I go to? Now, in practice, whether these might be combined, I don't know. Those are details left to others who would implement the program. But the point is, families have to know where they can get care, and they need to help in knowing when they need to go get care in situations that they are experiencing with their children. The Fourth Amendment requires fully capitated insurance programs under Healthy Kids to reimburse federally qualified health centers, school-based health centers, and safety net clinics for care to insured children. And this came out of the conversation that these types of clinics serve children all over the state, many of them scattered through areas far from urban centers, and are a very, very helpful way of providing health care. And that, as one member put it, we're really not about the goal of providing insurance. Insurance is a mechanism. We are about the goal of providing health care. And these clinics provide direct health care and should be strengthened under this plan when they provide assistance to our children. And the Fifth Amendment addresses Tobacco Use Reduction Act funding and says that it would be spent on the proven best practices for reducing child and teen smoking. I think many of us recognize that there's much more bang for the buck on the healthcare dollar on the prevention end than on the treatment end. Much cheaper to educate a child about the dangers of smoking than to operate on heart disease or lung disease later in life. So not only does this type of program impact quality of life one lives, but it also affects the costs imposed on the healthcare system. It was apparent that if these additional funds are to be spent on prevention, we want to make sure they're spent in a way that maximizes the impact on the children, therefore utilize the studies that have been done about how to make those dollars be used effectively. So those are the five ideas for strengthening this plan, for giving families a handle on the healthcare system, both as to when they need help and where to find it. And I appreciate the chance to come and present these ideas, these amendments, to your committee. And be happy to take a couple questions if you have them, recognizing that I'm not a healthcare expert, and I will defer healthcare expertise questions to others.
Thank you, Representative Merkley. Are there questions for the speaker. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. First of all, let me thank you for bringing these issues forward. Certainly the addressing the upper limits of the federal subsidized programs, I think, is probably fiscally responsible and something we can live with. But was there any consideration in this process? And I'm assuming we'll get the fiscal impact from someone else, because there obviously is a fiscal impact when we move forward with the federally qualified health care centers and the 300% versus the 350. But has there been any discussion of using other than tobacco money to take care of children?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Butler. Yes, there was discussion of that, and I want to be thoughtful in not positioning anyone who participated in those negotiations, and the goal was for people to speak freely, but I think I can say what I'm saying now, and honor those negotiations. There were two ideas put forward. One idea was, for sustainability, we need to make sure every dollar of this program is covered by tobacco funds far into the future. And in response to that, we examined numbers going out four biennium. The basic question became, will, in a situation where tobacco taxes stay somewhat flat, or maybe drop some if people stop smoking, and healthcare expenses continue to go up, is there a point at which those lines cross? And of course, the obvious answer is yes. So in the first year, there's tremendous excess revenues or surplus revenues, but then those revenues are decreased. The numbers were analyzed from the point of view of how many children will sign up. And my understanding is that the core numbers we were looking at assumed the very best outcome, that is, that 90 to 95% of the children are signed up. I've heard others state that the likely level of signups might be somewhat lower, and this, I'm not an expert in this, and I'll defer to others, but in the range, so maybe 90% at the high end, somewhere like 70% on the lower end. So those numbers really drive that analysis. The long and short of it is that this plan does remain sustainable for several biennium, but depending on the assumptions you put into the model, at some point you might have to consider additional revenue. So that was one line of thinking, that to be completely fiscally responsible, we needed to cover everything out of the tobacco funds. The second perspective is kind of 180 degrees reversed, which is, since we have more funds now than we had 2 years ago, let's eliminate the tobacco tax idea entirely, and let's simply fund this out of the general fund. And so I think that is a question that this committee will probably be chewing on. My personal feeling is that it would be terribly irresponsible to fund out of general funds, that we have a very volatile revenue system, and the last thing I want to do is for us to build a health care system for children that is going to be subject to being obliterated with the first hint of an economic downturn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Other questions for the Speaker? Thank you, Mr. Speaker,
thank
for
you
your testimony.
Thank
and
you.
Before you leave, I simply wanted to say that I appreciate the work that you and others did in the process of working on this bill and bringing us these amendments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Gelser.
Yes, are you ready to entertain a motion?
I am, yeah.
I would move the Dash 12 amendments.
Okay, let's pull those up. Representative Gelser moves the Dash 12 amendments. I think...
Are you ready to summarize the
amendments? Okay. I think we'll ask for a summary of the amendment, and then you can speak to it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash 12 is a line and a half, and it basically moves down the poverty line definition from the 350% to the 300% in two places where it occurs in the bill. And that's what the speaker was referring to with the amendment.
And that's a short summary because this is the simplest one that we're facing. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to speak a little bit to the merits of this amendment. By changing to 300% of the federal poverty level for individuals that are able to buy in and receive some subsidy for their participation in the health plan, we're able to do two things. We can maximize the sustainability of the program by dropping that subsidy level by 50% of what was originally proposed. But it also brings us into alignment with other states in the United States who are moving towards that 300%. And the reason that states do that is that federal match is available up to us up to 300%. It's the smart thing and the right thing to do to maximize that federal match when the revenues are available to us to do this. I think it's important to emphasize that this is not free health care. Individuals are paying a premium to buy in and access this. This means that it's putting health care in reach of hardworking families for whom their insurance premiums are just too much for them to be able to provide for their kids. And I think that this also recognizes that the affordability of a health care premium isn't always based on what your monthly income is or your annual income is. It's sometimes based on what type of bargaining power your employer has, so how high that premium is that you're able to buy into. So this will help us to cover a significant number of children in Oregon. And I would urge our committee to adopt these amendments.
Thank you. Other comments on the dash 12? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to know what the federal poverty level is for a family of four at 350, at 300, and at 250, because the health committee had considered the 250, which was even greater federal participation under that program.
Mr. Chair, may I ask for a clarification?
Representative Butler.
Please.
Great. When you say the health committee considered a 250%, there was an amendment that was offered,
yes.
But it wasn't accepted, and it's not my understanding that the match changes.
Okay. I'm not after the match, Representative. I'm asking what the federal poverty limit, what's the income for a family of four at 350, at 300, and at 250?
At 300, it's $60,000 a year, approximately. I don't have my sheet with me. I realized that as I sat down. Someone.
73,000.
73,000 for a family of four. Is that at 350%?
350. Right.
Okay. And at where is that listed on here? Because I'm for a family of four, it's approximately $60,000.
At 200%?
No, that's at
250.
That's at 300%. Could someone orient me to where on the sheet that list is? I'm very sorry. At 300%, I know these. At 300%, it's approximately $60,000 a year for a family of four.
I'm sorry. 300%.
At 300%, it's approximately $60,000 a year for a family of four.
I can't see it.
At 250%, it's approximately $50,000 a year for a family of four. I'm saying approximately because I don't have the chart in front of me that's sitting on my desk.
So the difference between...
Did you finish the chart?
And the difference also between, in terms of the income, in terms of number of Oregon children, it's approximately 14,500 additional children that would be covered if you covered at 300% as opposed to 250%. Thank you.
So family of four at
family
350?
Okay. I'm very sorry. At 350, for a family of four, it's
$70,000.
For 300%, it's $60,000. For 250%, it's $50,000.
Okay.
For 200%, it's $40,000. and less than 40,000 is below 200%.
Right. And the numbers of children?
The numbers of children above 300, and these are numbers of children that are currently not able to access insurance. Currently, in that 350% and above, there are 16,000 uninsured children. There are about 2,500 kids between 300 and 350%. These are the kids that we're removing from the plan today, if we accept this amendment. There are 15,500 children that do not have insurance who have families with incomes between 250 and 300% of the federal poverty level. And another 15,500 kids between 200 and 250% of the federal poverty level, and 68,000 children below 200%.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Thank you for your patience.
Thank you.
Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, these papers were passed, you know, what's the source of the papers that the stats we're listening to? Mr. Chair, could I ask?
Representative Johnson?
I do not know the answer to that question.
Yeah. I should say that
it's from the governor's website, and I believe it came from the State Medicaid Advisory Committee study.
I think that's right. There have been a number of different tabulations of these numbers that have been moving around in the last few days, and, of course, the other committee heard many of these things. The numbers are essentially the same on all of them. They're arranged in different formats. Representative Berger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think it's a valid question since we are moving on an amendment based on some of these facts that we get on the record where we're getting them from rather than just sort of plucking them out of the air.
Thank you, and I think Representative Gelser has done that. Other discussion of this amendment, the Dash 12 amendment. Seeing none, are there objections to the adoption of the Dash 12 amendments? Seeing none, the Dash 12 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, immediately previous to this meeting, we handed out the Dash 20s, and they were handed out at the dais, Dash 20 amendments, which would have the effect of moving that to the 250 as opposed to the 300. It would further have the effect of tightening up the language relative to legal residency, and finally it would have the effect of making certain that state employees did not become complicit in those seeking to divert taxpayers' funds. These were presented in a previous health committee meeting. The final thing that this does is exactly what the speaker had discussed, and that is that it would remove the tobacco tax as the funding source and use the general fund, and his indication was that in a previous discussion and meeting that both using tobacco tax as a funding source and using the excess of general funds as a funding source had been discussed. I personally find it somewhat difficult to fund the children's health care issues. And we've had testimony in this committee indicating that we are taxing some of the poorest folks in Oregon. We are taxing, with regard to the tobacco tax, we're taxing some of the most difficult to access minority groups and other folks who can least afford it. And thus, I'm going to make a motion that we adopt the Dash 20s, which are before us today, which had been previously considered in the committee that Representative Gelser is a committee member to, as well as it removes the tobacco tax as a funding source for the Healthy Kids program.
Representative Butler moves the Dash 20 amendments. Is there discussion on the Dash 20 amendments?
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry. I think Representative Witt was first, and then we'll come this way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I understood the figures that Representative Gelser reported verbally here a minute ago, that would eliminate roughly 18,500 children from coverage. And frankly, I have a problem with that in that we need to be able to cover as many children as we possibly can under this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Rosenbaum?
That was exactly, Mr. Chair, thank you. That was exactly the point I was about to make.
Representative Gelser?
I had a couple of points that I wanted to make. That was one of them. And on top of that, I think that the fiscally responsible thing for us to do is maximize the federal match. The federal government is willing to match our efforts up to 300%, which gives us a nearly 2-to-1 match for extending health care to those 14,500 children. It also would bring us in line with other states across the nation. I also wanted to share my concern with Provision 13A, which is on page 2 of the Dash 20 amendments. And these say that if the Director of Human Services has probable cause to believe that a child who is applying for the Oregon Healthy Kids Program is not a United States citizen and is not lawfully residing in the United States, the Director shall notify the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services of the child's name, address, and other identifying information. And like most people, I agree that the immigration issue is something that we really do need to tackle in this legislative session, and I know that we will be doing that as the legislative session unfolds. However, I cannot support beginning those efforts by targeting children applying for health insurance for deportation and reporting them to the authorities. I just don't feel like that's a hammer that's consistent with a child trying to access health care. And I think that kids have no choice about where they live or where they are. We are the adults, and we have an obligation to take care of our children who are around us. So I cannot support this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Gelser. Further discussion of the Dash 20 amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probable cause is a term of legal art. If they're involved in other illegal activity, then it's probable cause. The fact that they may speak a different language is not probable cause. The fact that they may not have other citizen documentations immediately evidenced in the time of service is not probable cause. I feel like, so that's why I advance that particular issue as a portion of the Dash 20s. I feel like that it's an appropriate thing for us to do to actually go after a program which sustains life but not lifestyle. To offer and entertain folks that make in excess of $70,000 an opportunity to join an Oregon health plan in small numbers of families is, I think, irresponsible. Many of the people that I serve in House District 60, $70,000 for a family of four is a very, very fine and sustainable wage. And many of those folks, while they do not have access to the very finest health care, certainly have access to adequate health care through the various programs which are presently in place for those folks. So for that reason, Mr. Chair, I have advanced the Dash 20s and appreciate the opportunity that you have given me as the chair to go ahead and advance that concept of what I believe to be a sustainable program, not using tobacco tax to anticipate this as the place where Oregon's children need to go to get their health care to watch people suffer through the use of tobacco and its related diseases.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Representative Gelser?
Yes, I wanted to make a point of clarification. According to the Dash 12 amendments, which we just adopted, individuals making $70,000 a year and more would not be enticed to buy into this program with a supplement. We've just, through our amendment, capped that at $60,000 a year for a family of four children.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion of the Dash 20 amendments? Seeing none, I detect some objections already to these amendments, so I'll ask the clerk to the assistant to call the roll.
Representative
Berger.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Aye.
Representative Gelser.
No.
Representative Reed.
No.
Representative
Rosenbaum?
No.
Representative West?
No.
Chair votes no. Representative Olson is excused. The motion, not having received a majority, is failed, and the Dash 20s will not be incorporated into the bill. Representative Reed.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the Dash 15 amendments.
Representative Reed moves the Dash 15 amendments. Are you prepared to give a summary of those?
Sure.
Okay, we'll hear a summary of those, and then you can speak to your motion.
Mr. Chair, the Dash 15 also amends the original bill in a couple of places. And the first definition is to have the Oregon residency definition to be 180 days or 6 months. And that was, I think the discussion was in the beginning of the meeting about not being a magnet for people or children who do not reside in Oregon at the same time. And also the coverage requirement to have that the same coverage, that ability of being a federal funds recipient, which means a way of checking with the residency or the citizenship requirements.
Thank you. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've listened carefully to the concerns voiced by some of our colleagues, both on this committee and on the other committee, and I think these amendments respond to those. I think it does a good job trying to dissuade, as both Mazin and the Speaker said, from our state being a magnet. I think since it requires children to be a resident of the state for 6 months prior to becoming part of the program, that's important, and offers the department a chance to verify legal residence, but doesn't offer that in a way that becomes a barrier to entry to the program. I think, again, the emphasis on this program is to get kids health care that they need. This addresses some of the concerns I've heard, and I'd urge its adoption.
Thank you, Representative Reed. A further discussion? Representative Butler.
Thank you. I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, do we know what self-verification by the department may look like? Certainly we've had issues in the past that sometimes when we've been concerned, as opposed to true self-verification, the department has gone out and actually held carousel seminars to try and bring illegals into the fold, and that's been of great concern to Oregonians, and particularly those that don't like to see the taxpayer-funded benefits dissipated by a department who has a self-verification project process, which has not proven to be terribly effective in the past.
Thank you, Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Rosenbaum.
I don't actually see the term self-verification in this amendment. Am I missing something?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Well, let me just say that my understanding is that the purpose of subsection 8 on the amendments is to require that the department adopt verification requirements that are essentially similar to the ones that they used to use prior to the new documentation requirements of the federal government for those who would be would not be subject to the federal requirements but to the state requirements. And so these regulations are well understood. Let me just add that the last audit that was done of this issue did not find any illegal aliens signed up for the program. Representative Rosenbaum, does that answer your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, it does. I just frankly find it somewhat appalling that we're talking about health care for children and that this bill is becoming an excuse to just bash people where I don't really see a problem existing. I understand that may not be the motive, but it just disturbs me greatly that keeps surfacing. And
thank you. Let me just add that I agree with your position. I don't believe there is a problem in that respect. The issue here is how do we get children in a situation where there may be an emergency. Mom doesn't have her documents available to prove that all of the various requirements. This would allow the department to adopt regulations that would take care of those situations and then go back later and deal with the verification issues that are maybe necessary in order to receive federal matching money on these sort of situations. It's an attempt to deal with the realistic problem that people have with gathering up documents to establish with proof certainty of their situation. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While we're talking about the disadvantaged, downtrodden, and those who are dejected, I still have to think of those folks who will who are addicted to nicotine, who will be expending $500 more per year under this kind of a program, and how much they feel, and others who have come forward to each one of us with concerns as to what difficult burden will have to be borne by some of those folks who have no choice but to just give in to a habit which has been long ingrained in them and actually promoted and now encouraged by the fact that we've got to have the tax in order to keep the kids healthy in Oregon.
Right. Thank you, Representative Butler. One of the things I would note is that we're talking about the Dash 15 amendments, which that particular comment is not germane. And so we'll try to maintain germaneness. We have about an hour that we can continue working on this bill before going to an evening session. Okay. Is there further? Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I have on the other section of this proposed amendment that a child not born in the state may qualify for health care coverage up to after they've proven that they've lived in the state for 6 months. I have sincere concern that under even a six-month provision, we will have children coming into the state with chronic health problems because this is offered in the state. And I don't know what the answer to that is. But conceivably, this could be a burden to our smokers, if you will, that I don't know how we can measure it, and I don't know how we can get it around it, but 6 months. I understand what you're trying to do here is to offer this to Oregon children who actually live here. But over time, I think you will see people moving to the state with chronic health problems with their children because it's available if the larger issue of health coverage isn't addressed, and I don't see that happening.
And we sincerely hope that a larger problem will be addressed. Thank you, Representative Berger. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that point, I think that's a very reasonable concern, and I know that is something that we received testimony about in the health care committee. And in determining the budget for this plan and the cost over time, there were considerations made for crowd out, and those were anticipated not just based on guesses, but based upon the experiences in other states, including, I believe it was New York State that has no period of uninsurance for people to come in, and that and in this program, we will have a six-month period of uninsurance as well as the six-month period of residency, and it would be unusual for us to experience a higher rate than states that have moved to these types of programs already.
Thank you. Further discussion of the Dash 15 amendments. Are there objections to the Dash 15 amendments? Seeing no objections, the Dash 15s are adopted. Representative Gelser.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the Dash 16 amendments.
Dash 16 amendments. Representative Gelser moves the Dash 16 amendments. Can you give us a summary?
Mr. Chair, the Dash 16 amendments amend the first page of the bill. It expands the definitions from A, B to C and D, which is a definition of or adding the kids advice line, health kids advice line, the health care access line.
Thank you. Representative Gelser, to your motion.
Thank you. This is one of those items that came out of the discussion, good ideas, and that this really isn't just about making sure that every child has a health care card. If we do that and we don't have health care, we've accomplished printing a bunch of cards. This is going to help parents be able to access information about providing health care for their kids, about where they can go and use the services that are available to them under the Healthy Kids Program, and it will also help them make good use of those services that are available to them to know what level of care their children need to receive, whether or not they need to come into a doctor, or whether or not a nurse over the telephone can provide them with advice about how to deal with the ailment that their child is currently experiencing. This is a good idea. It will lead to good preventive care, and I would urge us to adopt it.
Thank you. Other discussion of the Dash 16 amendments. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We don't know anything about the cost of it. I'm going to guess there's probably no testimony to that, and that'll be sorted out in Ways and Means. I just wanted to register my concern about adding something that has a cost related to it and recognizing that there's some give and take in the whole process.
Thank you, Representative. And on that point, one of the reasons for the referral to Ways and Means is precisely to deal with those issues, and Ways and Means, if they believe that these two items are too costly, could turn around and remove them. I will say that these are among the conversation items that the Speaker was referring to in his testimony earlier. Is there anything further on the Dash 16s? Are there objections to the Dash 16 amendments? Representative Olson, we're talking about the Dash 16 amendments at the moment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any objections to the Dash 16 amendments? Seeing none, the Dash 16 amendments are adopted. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the Dash 17 amendments.
Thank you. Representative Gelser moves the Dash 17 amendments. Are you ready to give us a summary?
Mr. Chair, this is my weakest point of the amendments.
Okay. Well,
but it's an expansion, I think, to allow for community health centers and the safety net clinics, as it seems. I
believe that's an accurate summary. The amendment has several pieces to it, but they all have that effect. That's what they're for. Representative Gelser.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm particularly excited about this amendment. This is an issue that we discussed the other day. Representative Berger raised it. We do have children right now who are underserved in terms of health care, who are receiving their care in school-based health care centers, safety net clinics, and federally qualified health care centers. And by explicitly putting this in the Act, it will help when the department does its RFP to have providers come in to offer a plan to be sure that there won't be a disruption in the continuity of care of these individuals, that these kids will be able to continue to receive care in the places that know them and in the places that are very convenient to them. This means if there is a clinic that's in their part of town or a clinic that's at their school site, they're not going to be told that by virtue of this card, they need to find transportation to go to a clinic that's all the way across town. So this is an amendment that would make it possible for these centers to continue to serve these kids and to receive reimbursement for doing so.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Berger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this does speak to my specific issues that I raised in committee the other day about this, the way the plan was written. There was no assurance that families and kids would get the care at the place that they are getting it now, that through the system that we already have.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in conjunction with what's been said by Representatives Gelser and Berger at this particular point, while traveling from West Salem to Lancaster may be a difficult situation, traveling from Rome to Jordan Valley or places like that are much more difficult, and I really appreciate the ability to go ahead and speak favorably on behalf of the Dash 17 Amendment.
Well, thank you, Representative Butler. Any further discussion of the Dash 17 amendments? Seeing none, are there objections? Seeing none, the Dash 17 amendments are adopted.
Depends upon whose ox is getting gored, doesn't it?
It does, Representative Butler. It does. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the Dash 19 amendments.
Representative Gelser moves the Dash 19 amendments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this amendment has particular focus on the tobacco reduction use program known as TORA, and this basically ties the program into the study done by the CDC in August 1999 of the ways to reduce smoking for teens and youth. And it basically puts it in two places of the bill, three places of the bill, just as the TORA funding comes in.
Thank you. To your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment will ensure that the dollars that we spend on tobacco prevention are put to their very best use, and that we are especially emphasizing the reduction of child and teen smoking. This seems to be a great amendment to a bill that is in itself a tobacco use reduction program. I think we've received testimony from our economists and others that 70,000 Oregonians will kick their nicotine habit and quit smoking as a result of passing the tobacco tax. So I think we can look at this tobacco reduction in two ways here. I urge us to vote for the amendment.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, if I could comment, this is what I call a well-duh amendment. of course we should do this. But it also helps me to bring home a point that I would like to make about this entire effort and this so-called Healthy Kids program, and that is that these are hugely complex, very difficult programs, and we are rushing through to a huge programmatic addition within the state of Oregon, and there are probably many more well does in there, and I worry a lot that we're missing them in the legislative process and in whatever processes come after this, and I hope that Ways and Means and others have a chance to dig deeper and find some more well does. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Representative Gelser?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Berger. I think it's very important that we focus on making sure that we've got the best bill that we can when it comes out. And this is the second committee that this bill package has been to. We had very thorough hearings and questioning in the Health Committee, and I'm confident that Ways and Means will take this up as well. And I think that something that we didn't mention at the very beginning of this today is that this is a plan that didn't just come together in these first couple months of the legislature, but has been put together through the collaboration of many stakeholders over the course of the past year, including the Medicaid Advisory Committee visiting with people all across the state to try to craft a plan that really will work for all kids, no matter where they live in the state.
Thank you, Representative. One of the disadvantages of having a bill like this go through several committees is that we're each responsible for a different piece of it, and we don't necessarily hear all of it. I'm very grateful for the fact that Representative Gelser is on both that earlier committee and this one, so she can bring that information to us. Is there further discussion of the Dash 19 amendments? Are there any objections to the Dash 19 amendments? Seeing none, the Dash 19 amendments are adopted. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the Dash 18 amendments.
Representative Gelser moves the Dash 18 amendments. These are ones I think you're more familiar with.
This is one of my strongest points.
Yes, sir. Would you give us a summary, please?
The Dash 18 amendments, members of the committee, would basically accomplish two main things. It would accomplish the first of all the hold harmless type of arrangement for the different funds that the tobacco taxes used to fund previously. You remember once we've talked about the increase in tax, that there was a reduction in tax and therefore a movement from the funds of what used to receive all those funds. So we do that in this amendment, and at the same time redivide the leftover, if you will, of the money between the newly created Healthy Kids Program. The Healthy Kids Program fund is defined in the first page of the amendment, and then it's funded of 90% of what is left out of those amounts towards the page 3 of the amendment. I've included in your packet also a sheet or two sheets of numbers. Those by now should be familiar to your eyes. And those sheets, the first one with the less amount of numbers basically shows the revenue impact out of bill as it stands, that we understand, and we understand it today. And the second sheet with the percentages on the top deals and shows the different amounts of distributions that will be the outcome of the Dash 18 amendment. So primarily it takes 6.5% of the new money and distributes it in the way that the 58 cents of cigarette tax used to be distributed, and takes 13% and distributed as a 60 cents that of basically measure 22 of the year 2002, measure 20, excuse me. And then, as you would see, the percentages, I try to follow them as much as possible. This basically leaves the general fund almost whole in the 09-11, if you see the bottom of the page, at 125,000 more. Oregon Health Plan at 31,000. And the TORA, of course, would get an added amount of money just because of the discussion of the previous amendment. The tobacco use reduction account will be getting about 22.9 million more than it is getting today. That's part of the bill and the intent. And so the new proposed use, or the Healthy Kids big pot, if you will, would be at 158 million in the 07-09 biennium, and at 210.4 in the 09-11. Now, if we go to the other face of the page,
tax side,
and we would see what the impacts are for our cities, counties, and the transit for elderly and disabled. Those adjustments we also made in order to be able to bring them back whole, and the revenue impact becomes slightly positive for them. And as you would see with time, that will go back to zero to where they were before. That's the impact of the Dash 18 amendment, Mr. Chair. And just to bring it to your attention, this will be, all the language of the other stuff would be worked by Legislative Council later on to bring all the things together.
Bring in effect all of the amendments that we adopt.
Right.
Thank you. Representative Gelser, did you want to speak to this amendment?
I would just briefly put it in the simple terms that this allows us to give to Ways and Means the ability to manage and assign the funds in the way that makes this the most sustainable into the future.
And thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this amendment is one that I have long advocated in behalf of, because when we talk about TURA, we talk about how to reach out and aggressively treat the tobacco use and those kinds of things. This assists not only the senior transportation in this process, but it also assists our partners at the city and county level that have the responsibility to make sure that tobacco enforcement locally is ongoing. It holds them harmless. It doesn't give them any more money necessarily, but it holds them harmless from the fact that because of the function of elasticity, we're going to go ahead and make a wad on this without balancing our budget on the backs of the local governments. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Other further discussion of the Dash 19s, or excuse me, the Dash 18s? Seeing none, are there any objections to the Dash 18s? Seeing none, the Dash 18s are adopted. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the Dash 10 amendments.
Thank you. And this one is yours.
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is as well another strong suit of my influence in the bill here.
Proceed.
You could feel love in the air today, right?
Yes.
I had to say this. I couldn't have said.
Economists deal with very dry material. Sometimes a little levity is necessary. Proceed.
Okay. This does with the synchronization of the time of implementation, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This puts the implementation, the effective date of the bill to be October 1st, 2007, providing that you managed to get out of the building by the end of June. And if that is not accomplished, it will be November 1st, 2007, and it's a rolling push for the first day of each month. Each time you push that date, which is not going to happen.
So if we get out of here on Halloween, the bill becomes effective on February 1st.
There will be more incentive for the on-time adjournment of the session, Mr. Chair.
Thank
it's already been a long session, Mr. Chair.
It has. Representative Gelser, did you wish to speak to this amendment?
I think that in addition to the merits of the bill, because it is Valentine's Day, it's appropriate to recognize how wonderful Mazin makes this committee, and because you bring the amendment to us. That also speaks well in favor of the amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've discussed this issue quite extensively during the public hearing. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, is there objection to the dash 10s? Seeing none, the dash 10s are adopted. Representative Gelser passed me a note that says she now has the demographic data and she's happy to share. Would you like to do that?
Yes, I would. The numbers of uninsured kids, that information came to us from the Oregon Population Survey, which is done every 2 years, and the income levels are from the federal government.
Thank you. Very much. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is my great pleasure to move House Bill 2201 as amended to Ways and Means with the DuPass recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum moves the bill as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a DuPass recommendation to your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this bill has come a long way, and it still has a ways to go, but I would say that as of today, it is a very good bill. It is, to me, the sort of bill that we came here to pass. It will be doing something really good for the children of Oregon, and it's something good for the future of our state. It is cost-effective. It's the right thing to do, and now is the time.
Thank you. To the motion, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to do this at my own peril, but I'm going to declare that I think that there is probably a severe conflict and with the rules of the House as established on the floor yesterday. We were told from the floor yesterday that any bill that comes forward with its own resources does not have to have a Ways and Means hearing. Consequently, I am going to question the ability of this committee to move this to Ways and Means, because there is no reason to move it to Ways and Means because it has its own funding source.
Thank you, Representative Butler. I'll treat that as a parliamentary inquiry, and I think the answer to the question is that while we don't have a hard and fast rule about when items like this need to go to the Ways and Means Committee, the Speaker has requested that it go there, and the motion before the committee is for it to go there. The motion is a proper motion. It's a perfectly proper motion, and that's the one that's before us. Is there further discussion? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, is there any way that we could get counsel and advice on the objection that was just raised to the motion?
Sure, certainly we can. We'll stand at ease, and we'll ask the clerk of the House to come and give us advice. And we'll hear now from the chief clerk of the House. I've explained to her that the parliamentary situation is that we have a motion on the floor from Representative Rosenbaum to pass out the bill with a due pass recommendation and refer it to the Ways and Means Committee as requested by the Speaker. Madam Clerk.
Mr. Chair, Ramona Kennedy, Chief Clerk for the House, and parliamentarian. And as I understand it, Mr. Chair, there has been a question raised as to the appropriateness of sending the measure you have under consideration onto Ways and Means, given, I understand, action taken yesterday on the floor. Is that correct? And the
yes.
Parallels is there any parallels between what happened yesterday and what's happening today? I would refer you to House Rule 9.01, and there's two sections I'd like to first read, subsection 1, only because it sets the premise for subsection 2, and it states that upon first reading of any measure, the measure shall be referred to the Speaker's desk. Not later than 7 calendar days following such referral, the measure shall be referred by the Speaker to any standing or special committee. As I understand it, the Speaker, and I'm not sure what bill you have before you, but whatever the bill is, was sent to your committee with a referral under those premises. It also obtained contained a subsequent referral. Subsection 2 states, in carrying out the provisions of this rule, the point being the referral, at the time of initial referral, the Speaker may make a subsequent referral to any measure to any standing or special committee to be effective after the measure is reported out of the committee to which it was initially referred. At the time of referral to your committee, there was a subsequent referral added to send this measure on to Ways and Means. All of that was done in compliance with House rules. Therefore, there is no guidance to the Speaker as to whether or not a subsequent referral should or should not be added. It is in the best judgment of in his opinion, as to whether or not a subsequent referral needed to be added. Okay? So everything is in compliance with the rules. Whatever took place yesterday on the House floor is not impacted on that subsequent referral that you find before you. What happened on the House floor, as I understand the question, and again, not having been here and unfortunately not watching you all, tracking you. Sorry, I was watching a different committee. but if I'd known this was coming, I would have been watching you, sir.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
That the question raised yesterday as to whether there was some sort of a line as to whether or not something needed to have a subsequent referral or should have been referred into Ways and Means, that has always been a leadership decision. It has not always been the same. There might have been a precedent or sort of expectation that there was a line in that sand, and as I heard the debate yesterday, and again, this is way outside of my realm of authority as parliamentarian, of a $50,000 line, that has no relevance to what you have under consideration today. The fact of the matter is this bill was referred to this committee, and upon that initial referral, subsequent referral was added to Ways and Means. So to suggest that anything that happened yesterday would make that now inappropriate is, I would suggest, as I think you already stated, out of order.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We appreciate that, and I think that means that the ruling of the chair is sustained by the parliamentarian. Is there further discussion of the motion before us, which is to recommend the bill with a due pass recommendation and send it to the Ways and Means Committee? Representative Gelser.
Thank you. I'd like the chance to speak to the merits of the bill as a whole instead of pieces of the amendments. The bill before us today, House Bill 2201, includes a great program and also the funding mechanism for that program. We've heard testimony in this committee about concerns about a tobacco tax and its fairness and whether or not it has an appropriate connection to children's health care. I believe that it does have a very precise connection to the health of children. Secondhand cigarette smoke doubles the risk of SIDS. It increases the risk of ear infections, respiratory infections, and according to the Surgeon General, children aged 3 to 11 are twice as likely as non-smoking adults to have markers, genetic markers in their blood indicating exposure to secondhand smoke. So kids are getting sick because of cigarette smoking. This is a bill that helps all Oregonians in their health by reducing the number of people that are smoking by 70,000. It is a tobacco use prevention program, and I would submit helps some of those that will be paying this tax because, as has been pointed out, many individuals do fall in lower income brackets. These are individuals that our statistics would tell us have uninsured children, and therefore their children have the opportunity to benefit from this health care, and the information from the Surgeon General would lead us to believe that perhaps they may be in need of that care more than children in non-smoking households. This is a plan that will cover kids regardless of their parents' income. However, it is not a free program, beginning at very early levels, starting at 200% of the federal poverty level, which for a family of four is $40,000 a year. Families do share in the cost. They pay a monthly premium per child in order to participate in this. For those who are not eligible for a subsidy, who are in these upper income brackets, and I think we saw on the chart, and we learned this in the health care committee, there are 16,000 children above 350% of the federal poverty line who currently in this state are uninsured. And I know that that seems incredible because $70,000 seems like a pretty healthy income, but we all know that the cost of health insurance is skyrocketing, and the ability to get an affordable health insurance premium isn't necessarily commensurate with the salary that an individual has. So this is something that reaches not just to people who are poor or those who are in poverty, but to children in the working and the middle class who currently are not able to access health care because their parents' income, at whatever level that is not high enough to make it possible for them to buy into health insurance plans at their skyrocketing rates. This is a great plan that helps all of us. It inspires shared responsibility. It does not take over the responsibility of parents. They have to participate in paying for this. And I think that the last point I would make is I was thinking about this bill 2 weeks ago. My daughter was sick, and she was coughing for several days. And on the third day, when she coughed through the night, we took her to the doctor. We didn't take her to the emergency room. She wasn't not breathing, but we were able to take her there because we knew that we could afford to do that. Several weeks before, I'd read an article about an individual that lives in my community, just a few miles over, actually in Representative Olson's district, whose daughter was in a very similar place. Because they did not have access to health insurance, they were not able to take her until a specific day of the week when there was a free health clinic. When they got there, they found out that, unlike my daughter, their daughter was in the late stages of pneumonia, was very ill, took a long time to get better, and was suffering with significant pain. I don't think that my daughter is any more deserving of receiving the health care that she needs when she needs it than any other child, and I'm very excited that we have an opportunity here with a sustainable plan, with the funding to support it, that will allow us to see all of our kids in Oregon get the health care that they need when they need it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gelser. Other discussion of the motion? Representative Butler.
Just one quick comment, Mr. Chair, and then I'll go ahead and let you just do whatever has to be done here in this regard. The indication is certainly it is not a free program. It must be paid for by someone. Healthcare costs, as are indicated, are skyrocketing. We understand that. And yet tobacco consumption is predicted to go down. Particularly the legal tobacco consumption in the state of Oregon is projected to decline. And consequently, I feel like probably the thing that we should be discussing here today, as opposed to a tobacco tax in order to sustain this, probably should be a tax on rolls of toilet paper at between 5 and 10 cents apiece. That way everybody gets to pay.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Other discussion? The motion is on the due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Please call the roll.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared passed, and the bill now goes to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further business on the work session? If not, we close the work session. The chair, improvidently as it turned out, gave away the rest of our agenda for today, and therefore we are adjourned.